Testing 1, 2, testing, testing.
Oh.
So I.
Oh,
Was
so
smashing that the whole. It was just like. Could let go.
My mic is on. Do you hear me?
Evening, everyone. Steph, can you hear me just so I can test my stuff? Anyone?
Hey Tim, it's Ian over here with the City of Tucson. Can you test your audio a bit to just make sure we can hear you?
Yeah, hey Ian, how's it going? Can you hear me? Ian, can you hear me? Ian?
Right. Tim, give me a second. I'm going to troubleshoot this real fast.
Commissioner Kenny, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you, Carver. Can you hear me?
Okay. Looks like you can hear us. We cannot hear you.
Okay.
We will continue to address that.
Okay. Hey Tim, you can hear me here? Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
When you go out there and I talk, you can't hear me.
I heard Carver when he was out there earlier.
Hey Carver, can you hear anything? No audio up there. One second. Okay, Tim.
How about now? Can you guys hear me?
Hey, Tim, can you try again, please?
Yeah, can you hear me? Hello? I'm getting a thumbs up. Does that mean you can hear me?
We hear you.
Great. Thanks, Ian. All right. Well, it is 6 o'clock. Carver, are you able to tell me whether we have a quorum or not? I can't really see.
Yes, Commissioner Kenny, it appears that we have a quorum present to start the meeting.
Great. Okay. Well, good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting of the City of Tucson Planning Commission. My name is Tim Kinney. I'm the Vice Chair of the Planning Commission. The responsibilities of this body are to advise the Mayor and Council and the Planning and Development Services Department on the adoption of long-range plans, policies, specific plans, and regulations that affect land use and development. Will staff call the roll call, please?
Certainly. Vice Chair Kenny?
Present.
Commissioner Lampo? Commissioner Lane?
Present.
Commissioner McCancy? Chair Ortiz Pino? Commissioner Small?
Present.
Commissioner Walczak?
Present.
Commissioner Wellett?
Present.
Commissioner Young?
Okay, thank you. And just real quick before we get started, everyone, since I'll be chairing this and I'm on Zoom, I can't really see you. So if you have something to say, commissioners, just speak up, I suppose, so I know that you want to speak. So I'll go on to item 2, approval of legal action report for June 4th, 2025. I'd entertain a motion for approval of the legal action report.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor of approving the legal action report for June 4th, 2025, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed, say nay. Okay. Moving on to item 3, Major Streets and Routes Plan Update Study Session. Would staff please provide the presentation for item 3?
Can't I see?
Good evening, everyone. Vice Chair Kenny, members of the commission, thank you very much for the opportunity to return and continue this discussion regarding the Major Streets and Routes Plan proposed updates. We have developed an additional presentation tonight to continue the conversation that we had at the previous meeting, hopefully to get a little bit more into the details around the mechanics of how the Major Streets and Routes Plan is applied and how we are really repurposing this tool to meet the City of Tucson's revised transportation policy goals. We do have about 40 slides that I think we can run through in about 30 minutes, but we're really here to answer and kind of keep this as part of the discussion with all of you. So at any time, if you have additional questions as we go through the presentation, I would encourage you to kind of take that opportunity to propose to stop us and have that conversation. So this should look familiar. So a reminder that we are here updating the major streets and routes map primarily. And the purpose of this document, which was established in 1982, was really to reserve right-of-way to meet future transportation needs. And the primary purpose of that is to ultimately reduce the impacts of transportation projects by requiring dedication and further setbacks of buildings at the change of use, development of new projects along our new parcels along our major corridors, or redevelopment of parcels. This is instrumental in really allowing the feasibility of projects to move forward and reduce the cost of transportation projects. If we're looking at a lot of the transportation improvements that we make, especially in the older, already developed area of the city, the dominant cost of those projects is oftentimes the acquisition of right-of-way. Not only is this costly, it's time-consuming, and it's also extremely disruptive to the community because we get into situations where we are acquiring properties, people's homes, people's businesses. The MSNR is a tool that allows us to avoid that and still meet our transportation goals here in the community. Traditionally or historically, in 1982, when the MSNR plan was initially created, that right-of-way impact was exclusively driven by the need for additional vehicular capacity. Ultimately, that policy was built around looking 30 years into the future, building a traffic projection, and seeing how many extra lanes you needed on the roadway, and setting your setback or your future right-of-way value accordingly to reserve that value. Our intent here is to really repurpose that to allow us to advance our new transportation policy goals and to remove barriers to advance corridor modernizations and complete streets projects. So the intent here is not really to be reserving that right-of-way for future vehicular capacity, but it's really reserving that right-of-way so that we can make our corridor investments up to and including getting sidewalks, street trees, landscaping, protected bike lanes within our existing kind of city without having to acquire a significant amount of property, which especially for a lot of these modernization projects, which are have smaller price tags associated with them, can be a major barrier to feasibility. If you don't have 5 feet back a curb, you're not going to acquire property and take somebody's business to put in a sidewalk. It just doesn't pencil out. So this is a tool to allow us to be able to advance those types of investments. At the simplest level, the MSNR map does two things for city policy. It identifies future rights of way to facilitate long-term transportation investments. And that's that value that you see on the map, 120 feet, 105 feet, 100 feet. That is how much space we need to address the proposed or planned transportation project. Goal two, or purpose two, is that it establishes street designations or the functional classification of the roadway. We talked a bit about this last time. That is calling roadways either arterials or collector streets, which is really descriptive of how that roadway operates within our transportation system. The presentation tonight, we've broke it down and talking about both of those kind of intents or goals. The specific goal of the 2025 update can really be stated in there's really two parts of it. Goal one is that we've been doing a lot of transportation policy work and planning work over the last 5 years, really instigated through the passage of the Complete Streets policy by Tucson's mayor and council. As an outcome of that, we've developed a new street design guide, which changes our cross sections of our roadways, basically how we allocate space within the amount of space that we have in the roadway. So 90 feet of right-of-way can now look very different today than it did 10 years ago. How would we use that 90 feet of space within the roadway? So the goal is to really update our major streets and routes plan to align with the policy objectives or the policy goals of the Complete Streets work and Move Tucson to make sure that we are assigning the rights of way appropriately to meet those transportation investment needs and to remove some of those barriers and kind of cost barriers and right-of-way barriers to advancing those projects. But instead of using a really kind of broad-based approach like we had in the past where we were using traffic volume in, roadway without, we wanted to build that out of Move Tucson to be more responsive to those Complete Streets needs. So we went section by section across the city and looked at what those proposed project improvements were to make sure that we had the right-of-way. But goal two of this update is also to be supportive of the city's other policy goals of making sure that we are supportive of infill development and really building out
removing obstacles along our major corridor so that we can have more compact mixed-use development that is really at that human scale and supports our transportation goals of creating more walkable environments and is more conducive to the type of development that we've seen requested in our Plan Tucson effort that we heard about through Move Tucson. So really making sure that that land use and transportation components work together while still reserving adequate right-of-way to be able to advance our transportation goals. So that's the intent of this, to get away from that kind of capacity approach and refocus it to meeting our complete streets goals. Since our prior meeting, we did make a number of changes which should be reflected in the materials based on the direction of this commission, as well as some additional outreach and conversation with members of the community or stakeholders. So we ultimately did remove that section of Dodge Boulevard from Fort Lowell to Speedway as a recommendation for moving from local to Collector Street. With this recommendation, it will stay as a local street. We are no longer proposing recommending it as a collector. We did the same thing for Fort Lowell from Swan to Craycroft. We had proposed it as a collector based on the feedback we heard from the community and the direction from this commission. We have also removed that. We took this opportunity to update some of the roadways in the southeast region of the community, sometimes known as the Houghton Area Master Plan or the Atterbury Trails area. We have a slide on that. I can get to that in a second. We updated the intersection future right-of-way allocations. We updated the proposed future right-of-way value for First Avenue, reflecting the in-development project. And we updated the right-of-way in the vicinity of Tucson International Airport. They had some follow-up airport staff to making sure we were aligning with a lot of with the Tucson TIA or TAA master plan and some of their plans for industrial development in the vicinity of the airport. Most of the other things were maintained. I have lost my ability to advance. Here we go. So the first change that I can highlight is this intersection piece. So while the values on the map of the major streets and routes oftentimes focus on that mid-block, one of the larger impacts of this that is often unconsidered is actually the additional right-of-way that is required at intersections. So there's basically this table that talks about the width as you approach intersections to accommodate all the things that are happening at intersections, additional turn lanes, potentially median separation, positive offsets, signal equipment, all the other things that need to be housed at that intersection. So we do reserve a little bit additional right-of-way at the approaches to those major street intersections. Previously, on the table on the left, you could see we were carrying about 200 and 300 feet of value. So you had a pretty significant setback from the intersecting major street for the roadway taper, as well as the vehicle storage and width. We're tightening all of that up to make sure that we are getting in alignment with the project goals of keeping things more compact, keeping things more to human scale, reducing those crossing distances at our major intersections, but still providing adequate space so that we can house a lot of those needs that are happening at the intersections. Just make sure we're accommodating for that. Again, a lot of that signal equipment, we need to keep that in public right-of-way. This gives us the opportunity to have the space if we want to do things like roundabouts or protected intersections or some of the innovative approaches that are coming to roadway intersections. We need that additional space to be able to accommodate that, but we also want to make it more compact. In terms of the HAMP or the Atterbury Trails area, we did some revisited the Atterbury Trails infrastructure plan to make sure that we were just aligning the rights of way with what is being proposed in those developments in that state land in the southeast of the city. The red were the existing MSNR alignments. The green and the yellow are the proposed new or realignments of the corridor. So basically, we've changed the alignment of Rita Road east of Houghton. We have changed the alignment of Vale Vista, and we have changed the alignment of Poor Man Road. Vale Vista is the one that runs furthest to the east. Poor Man is the north-south street that kind of splits the difference there. And then Rita is the middle of your screen, which deviates a little bit to the south away from that former red line. We've also added segments on Bilby Road, west of Houghton, Coyote Willow Trail, Poor Man Road, south of Vale Vista, and removed a segment and replaced it with Poor Man, basically tying into Marianne Cleveland Way. So this is better aligned with what we've been seeing from materials coming out of Atterbury Trails and some of our discussions with the Arizona State Land Department to make sure that this is consistent. Next slide. Hey. We had a pretty lengthy conversation last time, really tying the purposes of what the major streets and route plan does versus what our transportation investment plans do. So we have two distinct plans that serve different but complementary purposes. So Move Tucson, as we discussed, is our long-range regional our long-range city-focused transportation investment plan, which is identifying specific needs on our corridors and identifying proposed cross-sections or project scopes, as well as costs and prioritization of when those investments should be occurring. It is comprehensive to the city and is really one of the ways we advance our complete streets policy by identifying not only where we want to invest, but what our highest priority investments are going to be. And those high priority investments were largely driven by the safety profile of the corridor, the lack of facilities for more vulnerable roadway users, such as people walking and biking, as well as its location with the city. And we were over-investing in areas where you have a higher concentration of transportation vulnerable populations. That is to say, we were deliberate and explicit in that we wanted to invest more heavily in safety projects, in active mode projects, in lower income areas of the city, knowing that those were more critical and kind of lifeline transportation choices for people who didn't necessarily have as much access to private automobiles. 80 to 90% of the projects that are being proposed in Move Tucson are complete streets or modernization projects. They are essentially projects in which we are not adding roadway capacity, but we still are thinking about how do we invest in those roadways to meet the needs of the traveling public and to meet those complete streets goals delivered by or directed by mayor and council. The MS&R plan is basically a complementary product to that, which looks back at what our long-range investment plan is and assigns that right-of-way based on the needs of what we are anticipating on that corridor. It is not in and of itself an investment plan, and it does not identify specific improvements on the corridors. It is just reserving the right-of-way so that we have the space to advance the goals of Move Tucson. So it says, Move Tucson might say something like, we have a five-lane roadway, modernize the existing five-lane roadway. We have a cross-section, which comes out of our complete streets policy, which said for a five-lane roadway, you typically need 100 feet. So in the MS&R plan, we reserve that 100 feet. We don't determine what that corridor looks like until we get into the design of it, but that general scope is in Move Tucson. It's an important distinction here is also the time horizon that we're looking at. Move Tucson is largely a 20 to 30 year long range plan. I mean, that's kind of the foreseeable future when we look at, you know, traffic projections and kind of what the anticipated transportation needs are. The MS&R plan is kind of a multi-generational plan. It's 30, 40, 50, 60 years that it's looking, because it's only going to be implemented as properties turn over on those major corridors, which doesn't happen all the time, right? So it's kind of that slow grind just to make sure that we have that space to make those investments in the future, but it's not necessarily going to happen all at one time. And the incremental way in which it does occur might not mean that we would have all of the right-of-way we need on an individual corridor, but if we set it back on seven or eight properties, that's going to be a significant cost savings and time savings when we do advance those projects and make them more feasible. Here is the project list from Move Tucson. It is about $6 billion in investment that have been identified over the next 20 to 30 years, and it is 236 specific projects. It doesn't perfectly align with the MS&R. Not every major street in Tucson has an identified project in Move Tucson, and not every Move Tucson project is on a major street. We have bike boulevards, which will be on local streets. We have greenways, which will be following along water courses within the city. And then we also have projects that are transit operation projects or BRT projects or signal projects, which don't really have a right-of-way impact. But this is the totality of Tucson's planned transportation investments over that 20 to 30 year horizon. Again, the vast majority of these are modernization, safety, active modes type projects. Another output of Move Tucson was something that we call the street typology, which is a complementary designation of roadways, which is guiding the way we design our streets in Tucson. The intent here is to give us direction for kind of context-sensitive design efforts. So the idea around context-sensitive design is that something like an arterial is a bit of a crude tool when you're thinking about how a roadway operates in your transportation system. An arterial, Congress is an arterial, and Houghton Road is an arterial. Those are very different roads. They operate very differently in our system, but they have the same classification or designation. So what we did is we created this street typology, which guides us in how we allocate space in our rights of way, which is based on the complement of transportation to land use. So on the far east of the city, where you see that red-orange color gradation, we call those suburban thoroughfares and suburban connectors. Typically, those are serving, you have larger setbacks in those areas. You have more access control. You typically have lower bike and pedestrian activity. You typically have longer trips that you're serving. So those design decisions are going to be driven more by that, whereas you get closer into downtown, you have what we're calling urban thoroughfares and urban collectors, which again, you're going to see more active mode users in those areas of the city, maybe more transit usage, maybe shorter trips, opportunities to offset some of those trips. You're going to have a more dense roadway network, more signals. So we are making design decisions on our corridors based on that typology. And then we have one more layer on this. I think this came up a little bit at our last discussion, talking about kind of the primary purpose of roadways. Within Move Tucson, we have something that we established as modal priority streets. And this is a subset of the network where we are identifying really four types of roadways. One of them is not represented here, but we have the bicycle boulevards. Very rarely are these running on collectors and arterials. This is largely an interconnected local street network that is serving longer bicycle trips, keeping them off the major streets and providing an alternative network. We've all identified a second tier of that, what we call bicycle priority streets. Essentially, these are lower volume roadways, oftentimes collectors, where we see that they close critical connection gaps for bikeability in the city of Tucson. So we've highlighted those as priorities for allocating additional space for bicycling. So those are corridors where we would feel more comfortable, for example, removing a center turn lane to provide protected bike lanes when we're constrained in space. That's what that network looks like. The MSNR right-of-way is an outgrowth then of what that priority use would be on that corridor. And then the purple ones are what we're calling regionally significant corridors. And this is that subset of roadways that are really serving those longer, higher speed, regional scale trips. So there's a subset of those, Grant, Gulf Links, Valencia, where we see more freight traffic, where we're seeing higher volumes. So that's where we're kind of designing accordingly on that. And then when we have the streets that are not on the regionally significant corridors, we can have more balanced or other priorities. The MSNR does incorporate that as a consideration for what our cross sections and widths would be. Yes, sir.
Can I ask just a quick question back on the, I didn't get it in the typology. I noticed there's a couple of places where there's the little sort of purple crosses. One's at 29th and Craycroft, and the other is at 5th, and they sort of interrupt the other definition, primarily urban connector, and they become these little crosses where you're labeling them as neighborhood commercial. I'm just curious what's going on there.
That is an excellent observation and an excellent question. Those are a subset of the network that we are calling an aspirational street type. And the intent here was basically to identify candidate locations where we could see opportunities for something like main streets that are outside of 4th Avenue, outside of downtown Tucson, that would really prioritize like on-street parking, more walkability, zero lot line development. And the way we identified those were basically where you had excess right-of-way, you had traffic volumes that were below 15,000 ADT, and you had commercial zoning, all of those things that would lend themselves to that conversion to what would be that kind of main street approach, but outside of Tucson downtown. The idea of let's bring more walkable environments across the city, and these areas kind of have the bones to be that, even if they aren't currently that. And we would have to obviously work on with our friends at Planning and Development Service to think about the zoning that would support that. Great question.
Yeah, thanks. Can you just elaborate a little bit on what a regionally significant corridor is going to mean for Glenn?
Yes, I believe that's Grant. I don't believe Glenn has been identified as a regionally
scheduled. Oh, is that
Glenn clear? Is a bike priority street, and we've actually got a project that's on
active. Oh, I'm sorry. Design. Okay. Yeah, never mind.
Yep.
On that note, though, I just want to point out, it looks like Oracle is not listed as a regionally significant corridor because that's a state route.
Correct.
Okay.
Excellent observation. There are a couple on here that we need to revisit that are missing. If you notice the gaps in there too, it's where it comes in and out of in and out of city limits. So some of those county facilities, we were just showing what's in the city. But Oracle absolutely is one. There's a regional plan that is driving this. We can talk a little bit about how then Move Tucson flowed into the major streets and routes, and how we were trying to be really attentive to meeting the goals of Move Tucson through this. And again, trying to be a little bit more surgical in our approach. So this is the decision flow chart that we started with, and we're pulling back the covers now on our MS&R update. But this was the decision tree that we went through ultimately when we were making those initial assignments. So we started with that street typology and that kind of modal overlay. The first place we went is within the downtown university district. We said, we don't need additional right-of-way. These areas are kind of at their future build-out. This is not the purpose we're trying to solve. We're not adding additional capacity in here. We don't want additional setbacks. You know, we want that kind of human scale walkable environment. We want the zero lot line development. We don't have needs there as a department. So let's put a zero value on those as kind of an overall policy. So anything that's in the downtown area, anything that's around the university is getting that zero value by default. And we can talk about an example of that. The next tier down is we looked at all of our 236 Move Tucson projects and where they were falling on our major streets and routes. We looked at that preferred cross-section or general cross-section, which came out of our complete streets efforts. The projects were really driven by deficiencies. So again, if we had a safety problem, if we were lacking sidewalks, if we didn't have connected bikeways, if there were some other deficiency on the roadway, we looked at that right-of-way value from Move Tucson. That was the value that we wanted. So it wasn't just being reactive to those traffic volumes. We were really trying to make sure we were accommodating the proposed projects. Where we didn't have a Move Tucson project is where it got a little bit more cumbersome and complicated because we didn't have necessarily something to point to. So if we had a regionally significant corridor, for example, we had a standard kind of width that we assigned to that based on what our assumed travel lanes would be. Even if we didn't have proposed improvements, we just knew how that was going to operate in the system. If we didn't have any anticipated traffic growth on that, we would basically default to the existing value or the existing roadway width and not necessarily propose any additional width. Because it wasn't showing up in Move Tucson, there wasn't an identified deficiency on that corridor, so our operating assumption was that we didn't have any needs on that roadway. Where we did see that there were significant traffic growth, and a lot of this is around the periphery of the community, we did want to see if we would potentially need additional capacity in the future. So that would be something like Irvington Road or Marianne Cleveland, things like that. And ultimately, we went through all of those steps and came out with what became the major streets and routes recommendations. One other point that's worth pointing out, and I alluded to this, is within that 90 feet, we have a very different recommendation for how that section or how that space would be used. If you look on the graphic to the left, that is the old MS&R generalized City of Tucson cross-section. And you actually see this all over the city now. In some ways, it's beneficial because we have a lot of space we can work with. In others, it's not necessarily the types of roadways we want to build right now. So within 90 feet, five-lane cross-section, in 1982 in the MS&R, we would reserve 10 feet back a curb to the property line for your utilities, your landscaping, and your sidewalk. You would have 5 feet for a sidewalk or for a bike lane, which in 1982 was probably pretty progressive. And I'm glad we've got the space. And then 4 12-foot lanes, essentially, or 5 12-foot lanes, rather. So it shows 17 feet on the curb, then a 12-foot lane, a 12-foot lane, a 12-foot center turn lane, a 12-foot lane. So essentially 60 feet of your roadway is for travel lanes. 30 feet of your roadway is for vulnerable road users, bicyclists, and pedestrians. Under the new 5-foot cross-section that's coming out of our complete streets, that same 90 feet that we would show on our major streets and routes plan, we're showing 5 10-foot travel lanes. So squeezing that down, still getting the same vehicle capacity out of it, just narrowing up those lanes, reallocating that space to more vulnerable roadway users. So instead of 30 feet you have for vulnerable road users, when I say that, I mean bicyclists, pedestrians, transit users, you've now increased that to 40 feet, but you still have the same vehicular capacity, but you're still
you're providing a much more comfortable pedestrian environment, allowing for more street trees, landscaping, and protected and buffered bike lanes. That same logic can apply to any of these cross sections. We're also showing 120 feet here where we would be narrowing up our median. Our old standard was a 20 or 22 foot median. We're proposing, you know, we go much narrower, a 14 foot median. That should be reallocated to the outsides of the roadway. So within that same 120 feet that we're preserving through the major streets and routes, we're doing very different things with that space under our new transportation policies and philosophy. Yes.
If someone's speaking, we cannot hear online.
I'm speaking about the 11 foot allowable outside lanes on the 100 and 20 foot right away profile, and which does not appear on the 90 foot right away profile. I'm assuming you're anticipating less public transportation.
No, they're excellent question and observation. So within the street design guide, we have, I want to say, 30 plus example cross sections. So we were trying to get away from being extremely prescriptive. And historically, we might say 12 foot lane, 12 foot lane, 12 foot lane. What we're saying now is within your 90 feet, depending on the needs of your corridor, we're providing minimum and maximum values. So we're saying we do not want to go above an 11 foot lane, and we don't want to go below a 10 foot lane. In certain conditions, we may. So if you're working within that range, here is an example of your street assemblage with that 90-foot cross-section. An alternative 90-foot cross-section could potentially be on-street parking, three travel lanes, and a wide landscape sidewalk. So it's just an example of how that space could be used. It's not supposed to be intended to be plop a cross-section out from the street design guide and put it into your plan. But thank you for asking that question. And it's one that we continue to go back and forth on every time we advance a project.
Can I ask real quick, how'd you come up with the, with like the 10 foot travel lane, just out of curiosity? I mean, does that like compromise like car accident issues or anything?
It doesn't. And this issue has actually been fairly well studied in the last couple of years because it took a long time to push that. There was a long time, a hesitation of going below 11 foot travel lanes for concerns that if people weren't centering themselves in the lane, wider vehicles, side mirrors, things like that. But Johns Hopkins just came out with a really exhaustive study and looked at travel lane widths around the country and actually found a positive correlation between narrowing the travel lane and your crash reductions. So the narrower lanes, the fewer crashes you had. And in some instances, you do need that wider lane. Our SunTran buses are 10 and a half feet mirror to mirror. So that's always a back and forth when we're having to accommodate high frequency transit or high frequency, if there's like freight corridors and we make those accommodations, we prefer to push them to the curb lane while we carry a wider curb lane. But 10 feet is more than enough space for a passenger vehicle to operate. And there has been some evidence that it can in fact slow travel speeds.
Well, that would be good. But it just seems like, you know, personal vehicles are getting bigger and bigger and wider,
yeah,
you know, as these lanes shrink. Not that I want them on the road anyway, but yeah.
Yeah. And we have a lot of existing examples of 10 foot lanes. If you look at Speedway, and we'll show that in a little bit, Speedway east of Alvernon, you have 10 foot lanes. Stone Avenue, just north of downtown, you have 10 foot travel lanes. Country Club, you have 10, sometimes going below 10 on Country Club, 5th and 6th. So you can definitely feel the difference. The new sections of Broadway, that center lane is 10 feet. So we'll get into, and I can move a little more quickly, I apologize. So getting on point one, we're going to get into kind of how we've executed and tried to advance the goals of the policy of being more strategic and where we are reserving this space and also being removing obstacles for the infill development. So the first part of this we want to talk about is how we identified the future rights of way to facilitate the long-term transportation investments. And we're going to talk about each of those different recommended changes. So the first recommended change is we've greatly expanded the use of this zero value. So the zero value or match future right of way or existing right of way is this condition where basically that roadway is built out. We don't need to preserve any future right of way. In the existing MS&R plan, this is just in the downtown area. All those blue lines are basically where we would propose expanding that to. Some of the projects that were recently improved or widened under RTA, like we don't need to reserve any more right-of-way. Broadway is pretty much built out, right? So why would we be reserving that additional right-of-way? So you see Broadway's pretty prominent. Valencia, same thing. Houghton, around the downtown Mission. This is 22% of the network under the proposed update. So there's a pretty substantial piece of the MSNR where we are functionally removing that piece of the MSNR on about 22% of our network under these updates. So again, there's not one size fits all, but we're trying to be strategic, remove those obstacles to infill development and redevelopment while also meeting our travel needs. Here's an example of kind of that downtown context. This is outside of the downtown. This is Stone Avenue looking south. This is one we're proposing for that zero value. Essentially, this is already, it has good bones, quote unquote. It's built to that human scale. We don't see any future capacity needs on this corridor. The Move Tucson project that we have proposed is a bus rapid transit project. That BRT, if and when it comes to fruition, is going to operate in either a dedicated running way on one of those travel lanes or in mixed traffic. We don't need additional capacity for that. So this is that context. We've got those wide sidewalks, kind of that zero lot line development. And our current MSNR actually is holding this as 120 feet. And that has actually recently been a case where that has been a barrier, an obstacle to infill development. 120 feet is the same right of way width that Speedway is carrying. That assumes that Speedway or Stone basically into downtown would be a six lane roadway. And nowhere in our plans is Stone into downtown becoming a six lane roadway. So with this update, it's an opportunity for us to adjust. But up until now, we've been carrying this as 120 feet of right of way. So if you can see it on your map, that yellow line, so the black line in the center is basically the existing center line of the roadway. That yellow line is if a new development came in on Stone, that is how far back their property line would be with a change of use or redevelopment. And then if you take the 10 feet on top of that of the mandatory setback, that new structure and their uses are now getting pushed back between that behind that purple line, which is going to be a major obstacle to redevelopment and is going to significantly change the character of Stone Avenue. So we don't see the need to maintain that 120 feet. And we think Stone Avenue, as it stands right now, is meeting its transportation purposes. And we are comfortable removing that right-of-way value. The current right-of-way on Stone Avenue is about 80 feet. So that would add about a 20 feet of additional setback. So that whole area then in purple now becomes available essentially for infill development, intensification of those parcels, and they become much more attractive to kind of developing along Stone Avenue, keeping that existing character of the corridor. And that was a decision we made based on what Move Tucson kind of showed us, what our travel needs were on Stone Avenue. So we were comfortable putting that zero value. And we've done this around the city, but we just wanted to illustrate it with this particular case. The other largest change that we are proposing is the reduction, but maintaining a value through the major streets and routes. So these are all the corridors where we are actually reducing the right-of-way from the current value to a proposed reduced value, but still retaining a value. So, you know, this is where we'd be going from 120 feet to, say, 90 feet. And we only need 90 feet of right-of-way to deliver our transportation project, so that's going to remove a major obstacle to infill or development while still providing enough space for us to advance our transportation goals. Between the removal of the MSNR, the zero value or the built to lot line and the reduction, that is about 70% of the updates that are being proposed with this update. So only 30% are keeping their existing value, and there is not a single road in which we are increasing the right-of-way value. We were deliberate with that. We started this by saying it's going to stay the same, it's going to get smaller, or it's going to go away. In no case is it going to get bigger. One we heard a lot of comments about through this process was Pima from Elvern onto Swan. The existing condition, uncurbed, no street lighting, no sidewalks. There are bike lanes or shoulders, 11-foot travel lanes. It's pretty undeveloped. It's not necessarily meeting our complete street goals as a city. The current right-of-way on this corridor is 90 feet is what we are holding through the MSNR, which could be kind of a very comfortable three-lane or a constrained four-lane roadway. the existing property line or lot lines along this section of Pima vary between 80 and 90 feet. So a lot of the setbacks are already meeting that 90-foot setback. So we're not actually, on redevelopment, we're not actually going to be gaining space on this. But we looked at the needs under Move Tucson. It was identified as an urban connector type project. And based on the traffic volumes and what was needed, we are proposing this as a modernization project for which we only need 76 feet. So what we are proposing is reducing this from 90 to 76 feet. What this does is people or residents who are at that 80-foot setback, it now gives them greater use of their property. So if they're at that 80 feet, they are within the future half right-of-way. There's going to be a lot of restrictions on how they use their property potentially if they wanted to do some things within their existing lot. A lot of these are residential. There's some multifamily. What it also does is it opens up the opportunity to potentially vacate and sell property that the city doesn't need. So we are holding 90 feet in many places. If we reduce this to 76 feet, that puts about 7 feet on each side of the roadway that potentially the property owners could petition us for vacation and sale. That becomes a discretionary process. It doesn't necessarily mean that the city would sell that back. We would evaluate what our investment potential is, what our needs are, opportunity to meet the needs of the roadway users. But ultimately, that 76 feet gives us enough space to build out that cross section in the bottom right, which is a 3-lane roadway, narrow travel lanes, protected bike lanes, wide landscaping strip, and wide sidewalks. We heard from a lot of residents that they want to see this on Pima, and they were concerned about that reduction in right-of-way. Based on what we have around the city, 76 feet provides more than an adequate space to make that investment. And it provides some opportunity for the residents, especially those who have narrow rights of way, to not be an obstacle to their projects. Here's another case study where we are reducing the future right of way. This is First Avenue, Fort Lowell to Grant Road, for example. We were carrying 120 feet on this, again, like Speedway, assuming that this would be widened to a 6-lane roadway, which was consistent with the RTA plan. This was proposed as a 6-lane widening. We have subsequently downscoped this project to a 4-lane divided roadway, which means we no longer need that 120 feet. However, we still do need some feet. If you look at the current condition of First Avenue, most of the right-of-way out here is about 76 to 85 feet for 5 lanes, which is everything is absolutely squeezed down. You see on off-street parking, which is kind of into where that sidewalk area would be. There's no sidewalks on large extents of this. So to really build out a comfortable 4-lane roadway, you probably need around 105 feet of public right-of-way. Currently, we have that 75 to 80. So in the event that there's redevelopment that occurs before we get out there and kind of do our big capital project on First Avenue, we don't want to make this a zero value so that they're building into the right-of-way. Then we would have to basically purchase and demolish that property. So by keeping that 105, we are going to keep them out of the project footprint, and we can advance this in the event in the next 2 to 3 years there is any new development on First Avenue as we prepare the First Ave project. So we need that 15 to 20 feet to really reduce costs on that and reduce impact. Because one of the things that's great about this First Avenue project is by going from 6-lane to 4 lanes, we have significantly reduced the number of buildings that we have to touch and the amount of property that we have to take. But 75 feet is just not enough space to get what we need to get in this roadway. Sorry, a little moment of delay with these advancing the slides. And then the final piece, about 31% of this update, is just retaining the existing dimension on the MSNR. And this is one that we want to point out, Speedway Elvernon to Swan. I mentioned this earlier. So this is an existing 6-lane roadway, and this one is squeezed to basically its absolute minimum of every possible dimension. So you have a 5-foot bike lane next to 6 lanes of traffic. Every one of those travel lanes is 10 feet. So there is not another foot. We have frequent transit service on Speedway. And as you can see, just outside of the curb in front of the bowling alley, you have parking that is on private property that is basically sitting exactly where you'd want to install those sidewalks. So if we, and this has been a project we've been trying to pursue, if we wanted to even just get sidewalks onto Speedway, that would be extremely cost prohibitive, because if you look on the other side of the street, kind of through the median, it's even tighter. The on-street parking stuff we can deal with, but we have structures, we have porches, we have all kinds of things that are happening within that 6 feet that we have to be able to install a sidewalk. And even in some cases, it is just on-street parking, but it is the or off-street parking, but it is the only parking for that business. So if we take that parking, that business is probably going to have to close their doors. So we are proposing that we retain that 120 feet on Speedway to give us some chance at some date in the future of getting accessible sidewalks on Speedway, which I will be a very happy man if I retire from the city of Tucson with sidewalks on Speedway. I'll just show you. So this is an example of where that future 120-foot right-of-way line would be, that yellow line on the image. You see it puts it behind that off-street parking, which does, you know, it's not as much as we would want, but it does at least give us an opportunity to get those sidewalks in on public right-of-way, which wouldn't be a major obstacle and completely cost prohibitive and disruptive to those businesses. The longer term vision that we have for Speedway, and you can see it kind of in the cut sheet in the bottom right there, would actually be potentially going into the middle of the roadway. This is when we were carrying those 22-foot medians. I know there's some beautiful trees in there and other things, but if we want to get space and not be knocking over and doing a bunch of demolitions and get those low-stress bikeways in there, get those landscaping where the people actually are, and get connected sidewalks, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to take 6 to 8 feet out of that median and fit all of that in within that 120 feet in the event that, you know, we get that kind of major capital funding for, you know, a $70 million project in the future. In the medium term, though, if we could just get those sidewalks in, that would be a huge win. So that is really to illustrate the value of what the MSNR does and why it's so important, because otherwise, if those buildings keep redeveloping a lot where those current parcel lines are on Speedway, that's going to be extremely difficult. And finally, one final one. Again, this is one that we would be proposing a roadway widening. This is Irvington from Kolb to Houghton, two lane, uncurbed, kind of more rural context. There's been a lot of development on the southeast. We continue to see that with Atterbury Trails and the Hamp area. Traffic continues to grow. We are carrying 105 feet out here. We actually have 150, so way more than enough, but we just want to make sure that we are reserving enough space, because the long-term plan for this roadway, being a more rural context, it actually provides some interesting opportunities, is, wait for it, almost there. The ultimate build out would be a median divided four-lane roadway, but because it's more rural in nature, we could take additional right-of-way and reserve that to have offset more like side pass recreational trails outside of a more urban context where you do something like a traditional concrete sidewalk. So in a case like this, you might want to reserve a little bit more right-of-way, again, not necessarily just for the roadway widening itself, but to accommodate those recreational users.
Patrick, in the United States, do we have any examples of bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure being placed in the median?
I think Washington, D.C. actually does. Not on, it's obviously the context is very different, but it's right by the Capitol. They've put it in the middle. You actually toured it. Do you have any?
They do it all over in Mexico City.
Yeah.
Yes. So it was a running bike lane right in the center of traffic, and it was very safe and it felt very protected. It had nice buffers on each side. It was widely used, so it was really nice.
And I think some of the reasons were just my understanding was the special requirements of the roadways that were going down some of those processional ways in front of the Capitol and, you know, the IRS building, all that. So they needed to pop some of that stuff out when they had special events that were happening in town. So that was kind of the decision logic and some examples and case studies of how we went through. And again, we're trying to be more strategic in how we assign those rights of way. We're trying to be responsive to the context, integrate Move Tucson, our complete streets policy, at the same time meeting those goals of allowing additional infill development and redevelopment in our corridors and making sure that the MSNR is serving both of those purposes. As I mentioned previously, the second role of the MSNR is really to establish the street designations, the arterials and the collectors. And there are very few redesignations, but there were a couple that we were proposing. So I want to talk a little bit very briefly about the criteria that we use to really determine what's a local street, what's a collector street, and what's an arterial street. So a local street are essentially roadways below 2500 ADT. And this is more art than science, so it's not going to apply in all cases, and different roads may meet some different combinations of these criteria. Typically, there's a different classification system that the feds maintain called the Federal Functional Classification System, which uses the same types of major arterial, principal arterial, minor arterial, major collector, and local. We're using that same naming convention, although we're applying it to our network differently, but we just wanted to review for consistency with the Federal Functional Classification System. So basically, our local streets are going to fall into one of two types on the FedFunk class, and it's going to be a local street. Basically, there's no classification. It's not on the federal aid network is what they call it, or a minor collector street. And their minor collector network is pretty extensive, so our collector network does not match up with their collector network at all. Many of those are local streets, but we evaluated it. In terms of the location on the grid and how it relates to essentially kind of, you know, the public land survey system or our section grids, there's no typical spacing for local streets. It's really based on the subdivision, right? And then pavement markings and traffic control. Typically, local streets don't have pavement markings or traffic control for the most part. They might have four-way stop control with other local streets. They tend to be not the dominant street when they are crossing a major street. So you might have stop control at a local street as it approaches Speedway, but you're not going to stop Speedway to allow traffic to come off of a local street. No center lines, no bike lanes. It's typically unmarked. Collector streets tend to fall between the arterial and the collector. They're 2,500 to 12,000 ADT typically, and their role is to essentially collect traffic off of those local streets and shuttle them to your major roadways. In terms of the federal functional classification system, they tend to be a minor or a major collector. Oftentimes, we're more likely a major collector if we are classifying it as a collector. These tend to be on the quarter section or the 16th section. So the spacing tends to be that half mile between the 1 mile arterials, or sometimes on the quarter mile, essentially. In terms of traffic control, collectors often are striped, have traffic control, either signals or stop control, and are going to be co-equal with the major street that they are crossing. So oftentimes a collector isn't going to be stop controlled for like an arterial roadway. It's going to be a signal control at that. So both kind of are moving traffic in both directions. And then arterial are your high volume, generally over 12,000 vehicles a day. The federal functional classification is typically a minor or principal arterial. By and large, these are spaced 1 mile on the grid on the section line, and you typically see multi-lane roadways, lane markings, signal control, everything you would expect on a Speedway or a Broadway or a Grant Road. So there's only one roadway that we are proposing. We did get a number of comments about this, from changing from a collector to an arterial. So we just wanted to show kind of our rationale on this. The intention of reclassifying Pima Street from a collector to an arterial is because currently we have about 20,000 vehicles a day on this roadway, so significantly higher than that 12,000 ADT threshold that we had been using. It is currently federally functionally classified as a minor arterial roadway, so the feds already recognize this as an arterial. It is not on the section road, so that is one that more leans towards that collector. It is on the quarter section, and it is a 3 to 5 exclusively a 5-lane roadway with significant markings, signal control, moving a lot of traffic. So our recommendation is to reclassify this as an arterial, not to say that it needs to be more of an arterial, only to really be descriptive of how it's currently operating in the system based on the criteria that we've established. So we're not proposing changing the way it operates in any meaningful way. It really is just being descriptive. And these classifications have less of an effect on how the roadway operates. And in fact, that section I showed you on, or actually we'll use this as a case. So Limberlost is another reclassification. It's currently classified as a local street in our MSNR. Excuse me. It sees about 3,000 to 7,000 vehicles per day. So again, well above that 2,500, higher volumes between like First Stone, Oracle in that section. It is federally classified as a major collector. It is on the 16th section line, so that quarter mile spacing. It has traffic control, it has striping, and it's 3 to 5 lanes. This one, we are proposing changing it from a local to a collector, but that is not changing our ability to do traffic calming or to modernize or rethink the way this roadway operates. In fact, we have an active project under design on Limberlost, which is going to be removing the center turn lane because it's one of our bike priority streets, adding protected bike lanes, adding speed tables, street lighting, continuous and accessible sidewalks. That can happen whether it's a local street or a collector street. So it doesn't change kind of the tools we have available to us, but it does really change. It just makes it more accurately describe the way that this roadway is operating currently. And then finally, we have an example of it, what was currently in the MSNR that we were proposing taking off of the MSNR because it's not really meeting the criteria of what would be a collector street. And this is Bonanza from Kenyon to 22nd. It's got below 1,000 ADT in terms of its traffic counts. It is federally designated as a minor collector. And as I said, that minor collector can either be local or a collector, depending on the other criteria, but it was something we looked at. There's a lot of local streets that are federally designated as minor collector. Basically, all it does is makes them eligible for federal funding, but it doesn't have any design criteria that are attached to it. It is the quarter section, so that's probably why it landed on the collector list, but there is no traffic control and there are no pavement markings. So we would recommend that this operates like a local street, should be designated as a local street. That was a fairly minor number of classification changes we are proposing. The big one, again, I think being Pima, which got the most attention from the community. So we just wanted to show the criteria that we had used to make those determinations. So that's kind of the end of the presentation. With regard to our next steps, we again appreciate the opportunity to come back and continue this discussion and hopefully provide more information that was helpful in informing your determination. We would be seeking a recommendation to move this to public hearing in August, ultimately bringing it to mayor and council for adoption or action at least at the end of September, potentially early October. With that, I can take any additional questions.
Thank you very much.
I have some questions here.
Sure. Real quick, Lexi, before you get into that, are there any members of the planning committee that were involved in the this item who might want to speak before we open it up to questions from the commissioners? Okay. Well, now we'll open it up to questions from commissioners. Commissioner Wellett, go ahead.
Thanks, Chair Kenny. Patrick, thanks for a very thorough presentation. Really appreciate it. Even better the second time. I'm trying to come up, and put some analogies together here for how to think about this. And is it fair to think about Move Tucson, having just gone through Plan Tucson, we all know what the future growth scenario map does and establishes in that. Is it fair to suggest that Move Tucson and the documents suggested it or policies, lines, whatever, suggesting in that is very similar to the function of the future growth scenario map in the general plan in that it's established need, priority, vision for the future, and the major streets and routes plan more or less serves kind of like the zoning map, and it is establishing what is more binding and what we need necessary to move through, getting funding, etc. And then the second part of that, can you talk about the importance of establishing a classification system and what that means, and if we did not have that, what would that do to our opportunities?
Yeah, thank you. Excellent question. My knowledge of zoning and land use planning is just enough to be dangerous. So I'll defer to my colleagues here, but I think that's a fair enough of an analogy. The only difference is I would say the MSNR doesn't kind of control the way we design our roadways in the same way that zoning would control kind of what is allowable on somebody's private parcel. It allows the space and kind of the container we can work in, but we have far more flexibility within that container that is available, but they are certainly complementary plans. The only other difference I would say is as a department and as a city entity, we have far more control over our fate in the long range transportation plan because we control the purse on that. So those are public investments as opposed to kind of creating the regulatory environment for a private investment. But I think largely, yes, that's a pretty acute observation. With regard to the second piece, that's a trickier one. So there is a requirement that we kind of have a classification system established in the city of Tucson. That is, to my understanding, required at the state. How we want to go about that is really at the determination of the local jurisdiction. There is a federal classification system, which is kind of a separate beast unto itself. That is really established by the Arizona Department of Transportation in coordination with Pima Association of Governments. We would obviously be a partner on that. But that is largely imposed. What the MS&R classification system allows us to do is to be more responsive to kind of local needs and local roadway operation, and it's something that we have absolute control over. So it is more descriptive, and it helps guide us in the types of kind of traffic control, traffic calming, the way the roadway should operate. So it helps us in terms of design and guidance. But if it would go away, I think the replacement would be something similar to the federal functional classification system, which would be more imposed on us, but that is what the funding is tied to. So there is no necessarily funding tied to these local designations in the MS&R.
Can I go?
Go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to get a clarification on attachment C. You're showing the properties that are potentially eligible to use the community corridors tool as a result of changes to the MSR. Is that right?
That is correct. Yep. Okay. So by bringing new roadways onto the MS&R, then that would trigger, I think, the CCT that would now be allowed on those roadways. Previously, we had shown them on Fort Lowell and Dodge, primarily in Dodge. We've removed these with this new exhibit.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, is there anything anybody from Development Services would say?
I was under the impression when we left here last time that we were going to have the opportunity to hear about alternative documents than the MS&R. And I, you know, appreciate seeing a lot of diagrams about how the right-of-ways could be more effectively used to enhance bimodal transportation. But I still get the impression that it's very suggestive and not required or protected. And I also don't necessarily see like a comprehensive bimodal plan that really pushes our city into the next phase of transportation needs that is separate from vehicle traffic. So I'm curious if there were conversations that you had around alternatives to the document. And I understand, again, the purpose of the document that you just described, but I still would like to hear if there are more innovative, forward-thinking solutions that this is not. Yeah,
thank you, Commissioner Lane, for the question. So with regard to kind of that multimodal transportation investment, I would continue to lean on Move Tucson. I think we were very deliberate in that plan in prioritizing active modes, safety, and equity as our drivers of our transportation investments, and we are showing very few examples of where we are expanding roadways and adding vehicular capacity. In fact, we went so far in that plan as we actually turned our capacity analysis on its head. And instead of looking at kind of bottlenecks and where we have constrained capacity, we actually looked at where our roadways are overbuilt and identified about 170 miles of excess capacity where we think we could repurpose those roadways to other uses within that existing right of way. That is consistent, I think, with what we were seeing out of our complete streets. And our intent here was to really repurpose that MS&R, not to say that we are intending to reserve that space for additional vehicular capacity, but really to reserve that space for those projects that were identified through that multi-year process that, again, we're prioritizing those other modal needs. In the event that it did go away, and there is no state requirement to our knowledge that requires that there be an MS&R, customarily many jurisdictions around the state do use them, and it is a legal right to require that dedication with that private development, would be essentially we could go forth with eliminating the MS&R and then essentially increasing project costs or increasing barriers to the opportunity for installing, at least as a public investment, sidewalks, protected bike lanes, where we have those constrained rights of way. I think that would then be a greater driver of the prioritization of our capital program, where we had less conflicts, because we are not happily in the business of acquiring property. It is a necessary component of advancing our transportation projects, but that space is kind of necessary. I think one area where you could have an opportunity would be, and I will be deferential to my colleagues here, probably additional requirements with rezoning, where establishing setbacks from the curb to have additional enhancements for sidewalks, landscaping, what have you. So that would get you your improvements outside of the curb, but it's still going to squeeze you between the curbs if you wanted to get those bikeway elements.
Commissioner Kenny, this is Commissioner Walczak. Can I ask some questions?
Yes, go ahead. Yes.
So I had a lot of questions at the last meeting, and I think I am convinced by your case studies about why in some instances it's important to have the MS&R. I get it for Speedway. I get it for a couple other places. I wonder, so looking back at your donut pie chart with the different colors here, we've got equal to MS&R existing. We've got right of way to match property lines. Do any of these options lift streets out of the MS&R completely?
There's one that's the 2.8%, and that is the removal.
Proposed for removal. Okay. What is the difference between proposed for removal and equal to existing?
Great question. So it gets back to really the two intents of the MS&R. So the proposed for removal, meaning they're not meeting those criteria for why it should be designated as a collector or an arterial. So for like Bonanza, it fell below kind of that threshold of traffic volumes. It didn't have the traffic controls on it. Functionally, that's a local street. So we redesignated it as a local street. So we took a look at those. Some others were kind of remnants. Some were on private property, for example, or they were privately owned streets. We cleaned that up. We removed those. Some of them were paper routes that were non-existing and we have no intention of ever building. One was, for example, there was a flyover at Prince that was basically connecting to Goree across the Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. That project's never going to happen. We took that out. So it's a mixed bag of why we remove projects. The ones where we are removing the right-of-way is that we still see the value in keeping it designated as an arterial or a collector street, given the way it operates, such as Pima Street that we saw. But the roadway is functionally built out. We don't need any additional right-of-way. Stone Avenue is one, so that would be continue to operate as an arterial, but we are putting a zero value on that or match existing property line, because with redevelopment, we're not going to seek that dedication for additional public investment.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yeah, I think so. And I guess I would like to ask maybe Corin and Dan, if you could just illustrate with maybe a couple of case studies, if you have any, of what, if these proposed changes were adopted by mayor and council as soon as September, what would that unlock for developers? And how quickly? In other words, what kind of a barrier are we currently seeing? How much is this holding back?
Yeah. So Commissioner Walczak, kind of interestingly enough, there's been a couple projects that have recently come in where we've seen issues related to the MS&R setbacks. And one example of that is on Campbell, just north of Grant, there's an adaptive reuse project to reuse a bank for a restaurant, and ran into issues related to the future MS&R right-of-way, which ended up actually taking out portions of that front of the actual building. And they weren't able to change use because of that. And we ended up having to do an MS&R waiver for that. That's kind of a good example of really when if this were to be passed as is, that wouldn't have been a barrier for that, and it would have been able to actually go through and redevelop it because it's been right-sized instead of having that larger MS&R setback. So that's kind of an example of that. We're happy to bring some additional ones as well back to the commission if you'd like as well.
Yeah. Thanks.
On that, thank you. On that note, thank you very much for coming back this time and having some very detailed information for us. It was very helpful, and got a lot of background info and context this time that was very helpful. So thank you. And kind of a point, I guess, not really a question, but my understanding is that the MSNR comes up for a developer or a property owner when they are, when there's new construction, new development, or when there's a change of use, or in the event of a rezoning or something like that. So it's extremely gradual, and it happens as there is development and as there is changes of use. And honestly, because of how restrictive the MSNR plan has been, and other issues as well, having to do with nonconformities, but there's not a ton of incentive to change a use because of these requirements. So is that a fair characterization?
Yes, Commissioner Kinney, that would be a fair characterization.
Okay, thank you, Dan. And then my one question would be kind of maybe going to Commissioner Lane's comments. Is, you know, most of these changes that we're talking about here are to the map. Have you considered keeping the map and maybe getting rid of the policy document?
Yeah, Vice Chair Kinney, thank you for the question. That has been a ongoing conversation. Functionally, the policy document doesn't really serve any purpose at this time. As you saw, the cross sections have been superseded. A lot of the impetus for the MSNR that is outlined in the policy document, I think, has been repurposed to meet our complete streets goals, and it is no longer about meeting the needs of vehicular capacity, which is explicit in that 1982-83 document. And most of the enforcement mechanisms of it are already captured within the code. So honestly, I don't think that it would be the worst thing to, and we would have to investigate to see if there were any kind of downstream impacts of that. But I don't think the policy is serving much of a functional purpose within the city apparatus this time.
Okay. So in order to provide a recommendation on that, you would need to do additional research though?
I think that would probably be wise, and maybe we can come prepared at the public hearing to discuss that. Dan, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, Commissioner Kinney, that's something that I think, you know, we could look at that and analyze and bring it back for the public hearing, if you'd like, as an option.
Thank you. Okay.
I support bringing, you know, a discussion of the policy, not so much of, you know, getting rid of it, but there are a lot of implications that went into the code that are problematic just as things have changed from 1982 to today. And I know I mentioned them last time, so I don't need to mention them again. But I think a serious look at how the policy has, you know, informed the regulations within the UDC and making sure that there is that opportunity to change things that might not be working.
And Commissioner Wellcott, point of clarification, we're talking specifically about the policy document, but not the map. Retaining the map and eliminating the policy document or refining it. Thank you.
Anyone else? Can I ask one more question real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Does Move Tucson, Plan Tucson, or Complete Streets have any provisions for pedestrian malls, just out of curiosity?
Not at this time. That's a great question. There's no projects that have been identified specifically as called out as pedestrian malls. The closest I think we have are those kind of Main Street corridors that had been flagged previously, but that was still intended to have some level of automobile traffic on it. Not to say that a project like that couldn't proceed. It's just not specifically called out and identified in all of those documents.
Thank you.
Commissioner
Lane.
Thank you. So I'm also curious if getting rid of the policy document and keeping the map functioning, maybe there is a couple of things. One, a future in which, again, bimodal transportation, bike, because I see, I mean, in your presentation, there was a page dedicated to bicycle designations, maybe layers of this map over time fold in, you know, more intention around that. And also, we didn't talk about the streetcar being extended and where that fits into some of your cross, street cross sections. So if the policy document is outdated and it goes away and the map remains, again, there need, I believe, needs to be intention about how we move forward with more future thinking concepts around movement around the city, and especially as new commercial nodes become established through some of the other new zoning documents. So, and then the last thing, one of my bigger concerns really is how do we move from a place where we have documents that are saying we made space for this, we want this, but then holding people accountable to doing it and paying for it in the projects, because again, there's like the value engineering process kicks those things out right away. And in every single public comment, it seems to me that people want protected sidewalks, they want protected bike lanes, they want alternative transportation modes. So literally going away from like just saying, yeah, this is what our code and our documents say we want, but like you have to.
Commissioner Lance, it's an excellent question, excellent comment, observation. And I think where we are at this point is making sure, A, that we are removing any of our obstacles within our own policy framework that makes those things difficult. Because sometimes we are our own worst enemies and we run into ourselves because we have some policy that's been in the, on the book since 1976 or 1995 that says you have to do things a certain way. So then we have to give ourselves exceptions to be able to advance some of these more current thinking in terms of transportation. So we are bringing our code and our policies up to kind of the state of the profession to make sure they are in alignment so that all of our project managers are uniform and have permission to advance these things across the city. So I think that's step one. It is kind of eliminating those obstacles. Step two is then being more proactive and making sure that our, you know, our project managers and our capital program is incorporating these things into our projects. So more than just that permission, that it is deliberate and that is the focus of our investments. So at this stage, we're kind of in that permission, creating the space for it. We have the intent laid out in Move Tucson. We have the policy support for that in Complete Streets. And we're now translating that into our projects themselves. So even at our project scoping, at the very initiation of our projects, they're starting to look very different. So we're changing how, for example, First Avenue, the way we have rolled that project out has been very different than the way we approached Broadway a couple of years ago, because we had these restrictions on ourselves for Broadway that, that had to be a multi-year fight to go from that eight lane to that six lane section. We took that off the table with this policy background. We moved to that six lane to the four lane section on First Avenue and are deliberately prioritizing safety, designing protected bike lanes on that corridor and reserving additional space for more comfortable, safe pedestrian amenities. So it's kind of a multi-step process to make sure our entire policy framework in the city is in alignment with meeting these goals. And we're in a situation right now where that is not necessarily the case. Our technical standards manual, which guide the way that private development is installing transportation improvements, is not in alignment with some of our Complete Streets documents that are telling us how to do things. So we need to clean all of that up so that it becomes the easy thing to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So does, yeah, required thing to do.
Yeah, that's so, a good way of saying it.
So if, let's just say we make our recommendation to mayor and council and they approve this, I mean, how long is it again until we look at this? Like, could there be a layered process that we look at where it's like approve, you know, getting rid of the policy document, create the map, but come back like every, like some increment, we look at it again and make sure that there's still work being done to, like you say, removing barriers, aligning, whatever two things you were just saying. And then, but also like, again, like returning to the conversation of making sure that we're requiring that the future transportation picture is meeting
what the public wants to see.
No, that's a great comment. We don't have, to my knowledge, any required kind of update schedule on this. It has been piecemeal. That's why we've updated it 30, 31 times since 1982. And it's usually driven by an individual corridor need or project. And we come back and piecemeal and say, hey, we've got something going on. For example, Limberlost, we want to change the MSNR designation on this. This is the first time we've done a whole scale overhaul of the MSNR since this policy document came into being. We don't have anything in writing, but it's not about that to revisit it periodically to see how it's performing and to see if we need to evaluate it for revisions.
Well, if it's been that long since you've done a complete overhaul, it seems appropriate to me to like lay out a plan for the next few years and incrementally come back to this conversation. I mean, it's a difficult transition, I think, for a whole city to move from a car-centric mindset to something more progressive than that. So this feels like a big deal to me. Like I wouldn't support the concept of just pushing this in front of mayor and council and approving what you have here, because I don't think it's robust enough in the way of protecting a more progressive, you know, transportation future. So I don't know how you get there, but I don't think that I'm ready to push anything straight to mayor and council right now.
I appreciate the comment. I just want to also mention that this is part of a broader effort that we've been undertaking as well. So we are actively looking at our technical standards manual currently, and we are looking to bring that alignment into our complete streets effort so that we don't have these competing policies. And we're kind of taking a whole scale review of a lot of our policy documents within DTM to, again, make sure that we're removing those obstacles. So removing the obstacles is part one. Part two is coming up with those investment plans. So making sure that our investment plans are actually putting the funding with scopes behind the types of projects that I think the community wants to see and that we've been hearing from the community. We've been doing a lot of that under our Proposition 407 efforts. We've rolled out at least 5 bike boulevards in the last couple of years. We've got 100 miles of bike boulevards on the way. We've been doing a number of walkability projects. We're doing the Road Diet walkability project on 5th Street right now. We've downscoped 1st Avenue. We are actively planning the bus rapid transit, high-capacity transit corridor on Stone Avenue. So we are putting a lot of investment behind these types of projects as well as creating kind of the regulatory environment that we are making it the mandatory design priorities for all of our project managers across the city and really operationalizing it that way. So this is one piece of that, but there are other efforts that are ongoing.
Vice Chair, if I may, I've got an additional question. I know as much as we are trying to emphasize urban density and, you know, interior density in the city, and I know that your scope of work only goes as far as the boundary of the city of Tucson. However, I'm wondering how you dovetail with the expectation of potential growth, particularly on the east side, I guess, and the fact that I'm seeing on the other side of Houghton Road that, you know, 22nd and Broadway and Speedway kind of all go from the 120 to the 90. And if something major were to happen out there, would you need that capacity, the widened capacity, in order to even if there was a streetcar or a light rail or something that went all the way out Broadway or 22nd to some future development that we don't even know is going to happen right now?
Exactly. So, you know, our crystal ball is as foggy as we've got it, I guess, but we tend to rely, especially in areas that are faster growing where we don't have more stable population numbers, rely on those traffic projections. Historically, our traffic projections were very high and assumed pretty significant growth in this community, kind of built on that pre-2008 model where they were kind of taking a linear regression and they're saying, we're going to keep growing like we've been growing for the past 20 years. That has not proven to be the reality. And we've seen traffic volumes come down. Our population growth has come down considerably and followed obviously by the growth in traffic volumes. In many areas of the city, traffic has actually been down for the last 15 years. So we revised those based on what we were seeing with our traffic models and kind of correcting for when this MSNR plan was originally created and we were seeing 2.5%, 3%, 4% annual growth. We haven't seen that in 20 years. So that's where that correction is. And yeah, and we're erring on the side of being more conservative. That's undeveloped land out there. So ultimately, that's what we would think that we would need based on what the projections are. If a major development comes in there, they're going to have their circulation plans associated with that. And that's going to be reviewed in a conversation between city departments and the developer.
Are there any commissioners online who would like to speak?
No, thank you.
Okay. Any further questions or discussion? Speaking just for myself, you know, we've given staff here a lot of things to consider, and it sounds like they're going to come back maybe and provide some additional recommendations for us. So I would be in favor just personally of moving this to a public hearing, knowing that, you know, if we do have concerns at the public hearing, you know, public hearings can also be continued. But just allowing the public hearing aspect of it to allow the public to have more input on these things as well, I think might be good. So I'd be open to a motion.
Vice Chair Kenny, I'll go ahead and make a motion. I'll make the motion to staff recommend, or that the Planning Commission recommends that staff set this motion. Oh my goodness, this is off. I'll make the motion to set this item for public hearing on August 8th, or is it just August 2025? Do we have an actual date?
Yeah.
13th.
Yeah, I believe it is August 13th.
Okay, let me try that again. I will go ahead and make a motion to set this for a public hearing on August 13th for a public hearing.
I'll second that.
Okay, and I just, this is Commissioner Walczak, and I just want to say to Commissioner Lane's concerns, I share your concerns, and I think that in order for this group to have approved and pushed forward the community corridors tool, it's really important that, as imperfect as this might be, that we don't hold this up any longer, because people are wanting to use it and this is a major barrier. And I agree, more frequent check-in on something like this is a good idea, and maybe that could be a recommendation passed along.
Any further discussion?
I would just say that that's a good recommendation for any long-range plan, is just have a regular check-in, check-up. You know, are we getting close, or mm-hmm. whatever. So, generally.
I agree. Thank you. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. Okay, it passes. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to move on to item number 4, PDSD staff announcements. Would staff please provide any updates?
I mentioned this at the last meeting, but since we have some different folks here, just want to let the Planning Commission know that Mayor and Council did approve Plan Tucson 2025. Pretty much as recommended by the Planning Commission, with very minimal last minute tweaks. So we are now working on community outreach and education to educate our community about Plan Tucson to make sure folks are aware of this updated general plan that will be on the ballot for voter consideration in November, November 4th, 2025.
Thank you, Corin. Item number 5, future agenda items. Would staff please provide the commission with any upcoming agenda items?
I think the only one we have scheduled right now is the MSNR update public hearing on the 13th of August. Thanks.
Great, thank you. And item number 6, call to the audience. At this time, I'd like to offer the public an opportunity to speak on any subject not listed on the current agenda as a public hearing. If anyone would like to speak, please raise their hand or speak to let me know. Carver, did anybody sign in? Doesn't look like anybody's there, but let me know.
Yes, Vice Chair Kinney, there is no one here to speak.
Okay. Anybody online wishing to speak? Okay, seeing no one. Item 7, call to adjourn. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Yeah, there was a long delay there.
Yeah.
Second? Anybody?
Second.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Here.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. Thank you all.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Take care. Have a good night.
Thanks, everyone.